Welcome to Ask JTF, the program on which we answer questions or attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. But before we get to our questions, this program is dedicated to Erefuah Shlema, complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Shlomo Ben Sarah, and Dorit Bat Sarah. And to Ilui Neshamot, elevating of the souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Shlomo, Daniel Nankin, Hadassah Bat Yitzchak, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Zev Ben Dov, Lunita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Ruven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Binyamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. And people have been asking, how do they help the Hilltop Youth? How do they donate to the Hilltop Youth? There are two ways to do that. One is through PayPal online. If you go to our Hebrew main page, which is hayamin.org, on top you'll see a button in English that says donate, and you go to and you just click on the donate button. It'll be very easy. You don't have to have a PayPal account to donate. If you're making a one-time contribution, you don't need a PayPal account, and you can help the Hilltop Youth by donating there through PayPal online, or you can do it through the regular mail. You just mail checks and money orders to JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. Again, JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York 11365. The address, of course, also you can find on our main pages. Let's get to our questions now from our great JTFers, something which I always look forward to every week. And we start off with the great Binyamin Yisrael, who says, and I quote, "Discuss the handling of the war in Afghanistan by 1. George Wahhabi Bush, 2. BHO, meaning Barack Hussein Obama, 3. Donald Trump, 4. Sleepy Joe, meaning Joe Biden." Well, the handling of the war in Afghanistan was a disaster from beginning to end. Everyone who handled it did it poorly. George Wahhabi Bush should never have invaded Afghanistan to begin with. And Obama should never have continued that occupation of the country. When he invaded and occupied the country with American troops, that was a big mistake. JTF was against it from the start. When 90% of the American people in the polls, because this was right after 9/11, and 90% of the American people were supporting the invasion of Afghanistan, and it was considered to be unpatriotic to be against it, JTF said this is a big mistake. You don't occupy Muslim Nazi countries. The United States should have just carpet bombed the Taliban and the terrorists in Afghanistan, just carpet bombed them relentlessly, and that would have taught them quite a lesson. You could have killed tens of thousands of them, and a single American troop would not have been lost. You would have had no casualties. You would have saved huge, some endless billions of dollars that have been wasted in this endless adventure in Afghanistan. It was a terrible mistake that Bush made, and Obama continued the mistake. Donald Trump and Joe Biden were correct in saying that we should get out of Afghanistan, but Trump didn't do it. Trump let this thing prolong this and let this go on. He didn't have the guts to actually follow through and completely withdraw. He just spoke. Like everything else Trump did, he was a bluff. It was all a bluff. And then Biden finally did withdraw American troops, which was the right thing to do, but he did it in a sloppy, ineffective, disastrous way. So all of them screwed up from beginning to end. And Binyamin Yisrael now writes, "Discuss the musician Prince." Well, you know, again, I don't know much about him except that he was a drug addict and that he was an extremely successful musical... He had an extremely successful musical career, especially in the 1990s, something which, being that I'm 65 years old, obviously I lived through that period and I remember it. His songs like Purple Rain were made him huge amounts of money, so he was very successful, made huge amounts of money, even though he was completely immoral. And what does he do with it? He becomes a drug addict and overdoses on drugs and basically commits suicide. One way, any way you want to look at it, that's a form of committing suicide, being using drugs excessively, dangerous drugs that lead to your death. Just insanity, complete insanity. And, you know, he did, for instance, one of his songs, Thieves in the Temple, is an anti-Semitic theme. In other words, in the Jewish temple, in Beit HaMikdash, that thieves in the temple, which is an anti-Semitic theme that comes from the Christian, Bible, where Yeshu goes in and accuses the Jews in the temple of being thieves. You know, just there's no question, anti-Semitic theme that with an anti-Semitic undertone referring to our holy temple. So, you know, I didn't shed a tear when he overdosed, to tell you the truth. But what a waste, with all his money and success, the good he could have done in the world, the things he could have done to make this a better world, and instead look what he did. Thank you, Binyamin. Now we go to Hirvatsky Noachide, who always asks great questions, and who writes, Tractate Sanhedrin 59a says that a Gentile who engages in Torah study is considered like a high priest. Is there a greater refutation of the argument that Judaism is anti-Gentile, unquote? Oh, of course. And who makes these arguments? People who believe in religions like Islam, which is a religion that says that all non-Muslim infidels must either be forcibly converted or slaughtered, must be either turned into slaves of the Muslims and forcibly converted, or mass or murdered in genocide, in a holocaust against all non-Muslims. That's what the Quran literally says. That's what Muhammad and the Quran and the Muslims literally were preaching. And, you know, that's Islam. Then you have the other big religion in the Western world, Christianity. And what does Christianity say? Christianity says if you're not a Christian, you're going to burn in hell. Look at the book of Revelation. You're going to burn in the lake of fire. You're going to burn in hell forever and ever. Forever and ever, just because you don't believe in Jesus, just because you don't believe in the Hanged One. You can be the most evil, monstrous, mass murderer. You could be a Hitler or a Stalin. All you have to do then is say, "Forgive me, Jesus. I believe in Jesus." That's it. You're in. You go to paradise forever if you do that. What a monstrous religious doctrine, that you just have to believe in Jesus and you're forgiven no matter what your horrible, horrible crimes you committed against innocent people. You could be the most evil person. And on the other hand, you could be the most righteous, beautiful, magnificent human being. But if you don't believe in Jesus, you're going to hell and you're going to burn in the lake of fire forever and ever. What a cruel, vicious, monstrous type of doctrine. And telling people that they can go out and butcher innocent people and do all these other horrible things, and then if they just ask Jesus to forgive them, they're completely forgiven. How convenient. How convenient that was so popular in Europe, a country where people enjoyed butchering each other for centuries. And they wanted a religion where they could escape and be forgiven and get away with it and soothe their conscience and say, "Well, listen, I'm forgiven because Jesus died on the cross for me, so it doesn't matter even if I massacred huge numbers of innocent people and committed terrible crimes and did terrible things to people and was a cruel, low-life, degenerate beast my whole life. Doesn't matter. As long as you believe in Jesus, Jesus died on the cross for you. That's all. You just have to say you believe and confess and you go to paradise forever." And if you kill righteous, innocent Jews and innocent Jewish men, women, and children because they don't believe in Jesus, they go to hell forever and burn in a lake of fire forever. That's Christianity. What type of a God would create a religion like that? Of course, it's not. There is no God there. It's man-made. But the Jewish religion is the religion which the opposite is true. The Jewish religion is devoted not only to redeeming the Jewish people and saving the Jewish people, of course, which is, of course, a very important theme of the religion, but God chose a people out of all nations of the world to be a light unto the nations. Or la amim, or la goyim, a light unto the nations, a holy nation, a nation of priests. The Jews were chosen in order to be like a nation of priests who would set an example for the world, and then the world would come to God, the people in the world, those who through their own free will decide to do so, would come to God. They would learn to be moral and decent and kind and compassionate and good people. And from learning that, because of their deeds, because talk is cheap, actions speak louder than words. In Judaism, your deeds do count. And it does matter what you do. In Islam, it doesn't, because they say that, because the Sunni Muslims, which are 90% of the world's Muslims, believe that Allah determined everything. If you don't believe in Allah, and you don't, Allah already pre-decided, you don't even have free will in Sunni Islam. There's no free will. So why are people so severely, brutally punished? The Quran describes the brutal punishment. Why are you punishing them? They didn't have free will anyway. It goes against the will of Allah for them to have free will. They were forced to do what they did. Just like the righteous are being rewarded. Why are they being rewarded in Islam? They were forced to be righteous. Religion that makes no sense at all. It's completely insane. And the Christian religion, well, we've already described what we think of the morals there. But in Judaism, if you're a good and decent person and do what's right in the eyes of God, and you live the right life, and you have the relationship, and you believe in God, and you stand for what's right, you're going to be rewarded, Jew or Gentile. There are Jews who are evil, who will have no place in the next world. And there are Gentiles who are righteous, who will have eternal paradise. You can't have a religion that is more tolerant and loving and truthful and just than that religion, the religion of Judaism, because that's the true religion of God. That's why biblical prophecies being fulfilled. That's why the Jews did come back to their land, even though the Christians and the Muslims always said they never could. It could never happen because the Jews are cursed and homeless and they're destined to suffer forever. And look what happened. God did bring them back to their land. Judaism has been proven true. There's no question what the true religion is. And the claim that Judaism's anti-Gentile. The only people who make that claim are people who are using what we call reflection psychology. In other words, because their religion is viciously hateful toward everybody, they assume that every other religion is the same, but Judaism really is different. And in Judaism, every human being is judged by their deeds. Every human being answers for their deeds. If you're good and kind and compassionate and merciful and truthful and honest with your fellow human beings, and if you live your life the way you're supposed to live your life, properly following God's laws, then God will be good and kind and merciful toward you on the day of judgment. And if not, if you were cruel and evil and didn't care about other people, God is not going to care about you either. It's going to be midah keneged midah, measure for measure, the judgment on Yom Hadin, on the day of judgment. That's a religion of justice and truth. Thank you very much, Hirvatsky. As always, great questions. And now, Yimach Shmo to Islam. It's so good to see you back, Yimach Shmo to Islam. Yimach Shmo to Islam writes, and I quote, "Discuss Roman Polanski, another disgusting, self-hating Jew," unquote. Very, very true. Roman Polanski, this is a guy who was a survivor of the Holocaust. You know, family came from Poland. And with a name like Polanski, obviously his family would be coming from Poland. Self-hating Jewish film director, producer, screenwriter, actor, you name it. And again, someone who could have had tremendous success, who was very talented. God gave him tremendous talent and success, and look what he uses it for. First of all self-hating movies and self-hating activities his whole life. Then he marries outside the Jewish faith, which Jews are not allowed to do. Jews must marry their fellow Jews. Jews are not allowed to marry outside the faith. It's part of the commandments in the Torah. It's the worst thing that a Jew could do is marry outside their faith. Very, very bad. And because that's destroying the continuity of the Jewish people and the special mission that the Jewish people have in the world, to be a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests. He marries the actress Sharon Tate. And by the way, Sharon Tate, the actress that he married, was later murdered together with four other people in Polanski's own home. They were murdered by the very famous case. This was a very famous case in the late 60s. I think it was 1969. I remember I was a child, but I still remember it. I was 12 or 13 years old, but I remember it was very much in the news. The Charles Manson cult, those of you who know who Charles Manson was and his cult, they murdered Sharon Tate, who was Polanski's wife, and they murdered four other people in Polanski's home. And in the 1970s, what does Polanski do? He drugs and rapes a 13-year-old girl. A 13-year-old girl he drugs and rapes. Look what an immoral beast. and then he fled the United States to avoid sentencing. And they gave him sanctuary in France. They let him go to France, gave him sanctuary, even though he drugged and raped a 13-year-old girl. Oh, you're right, Yimach Shmo to Islam. He is a disgusting, self-hating Jew. Thank you, Yimach Shmo to Islam. And now we go to the great Nekama. Now, this is going to be good. I know it already, because with Nekama, it's always the greatest questions, always the best. Nekama writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, please comment. One, it is generally accepted that a person is considered intellectually disabled with an IQ below 80. Even more so, an IQ of 67 is in the mentally retarded range. Unsurprisingly, nearly all sub-Saharan African countries have a national average IQ range between 60 and 70. I don't see how there can't be at least a partial genetic component to this problem, unquote. Yes, absolutely so right, that in many black African countries, I mean, these are sub-Saharan African countries, are the black African countries, the average IQ of people in many of these countries is literally in the range of what the IQ is for mentally retarded Caucasians and other people who are mentally retarded. But that's the average IQ in these black African countries is at the mentally retarded level. Of course it plays a role. Of course it plays a role. And because these people feel inferior and they feel stupid, and so instead of wanting to improve themselves, instead of looking at superior culture, because they were put, the ones that came to the United States and came to Western countries are put in a superior culture where they could learn education, and I think they could improve themselves if they decided to. I think they could improve themselves, even improve their IQ. But there is probably a partial genetic component, but I still think that if they chose their own free will to do the right thing, that they could make a positive contribution to the world, but they choose to be evil. Even a stupid person, even someone who is partially retarded, can be a righteous person and can contribute to the world. Every human being who has free will can make a contribution to the world, but they decide not to. But very good point, Nekama. And now, second question from Nekama. Some of the best laughs I've ever had were when you told about your interactions with Brasilia and Cleopatra Jefferson. These stories are all-time classics. I am almost afraid to ask, but do you have any recent interactions with such primates? All the best. I told you Nekama knows how to ask questions. You know, I needed a new cell phone. So I went to the cell phone store. And I was waiting online. And in front of me is someone who's asking for help from the people who work in the cell phone store because he didn't know how to block certain callers. He wanted to block certain callers, so he's asking for help. And he's saying, I don't want call from them women's. That be calling me all the time to support. They say that I'm the father of their children. They say I'm be the father of their children. You know? I mean, they're four different women's. And they call me all the time. I don't want them calling me no more. Can you help me block their phone? I want to block the women's that be calling me all the time. And so he wanted to block the four women's that be calling him all the time, because he obviously had children with them, wasn't married to them, had children with them and abandoned them. And so they call him, and who knows who else they get to call, or because they're trying to get child support. I don't know what the story is, but he wanted those numbers blocked. This was something that just happened this week, that I was in the cell phone, and I see this there, and he's screaming, he doesn't think there's anything wrong with it. You know, he's talking out loud with a loud voice, talking about the them four women that think that I be the father of their children. So, what can I say? You know, we have a saying that's very true. The most confusing... What is the most confusing day in Harlem? Father's Day. Anyway, something to think about. I told you Nekama's questions are going to be great. Okay, thank you, Nekama. And next we go to Ram 770 or Ram 770 or Shvameot Veshivim, you can pick it either way, you can choose to read that in Hebrew. And Ram writes to me in Hebrew, and I quote, Shalom Chaim Hayakar Mashlomcha. Hello Chaim, how are you? I'm translating as we go along. Mitztaer she'ani lo yachol lirshom be'anglit ki kasheli be'anglit letzari ha'im ze nachon she'ata tivoni. And then he writes, I'm sorry that I can't write in English because it's difficult for me in English. But is it true that you are a vegetarian? Okay. Im ken ech karalecha. How did it happen that you became a vegetarian? Okay, let me quickly answer him in Hebrew, and then I'll translate the answer in English. Lo ram ani lo tivoni ki ani ochel dagim lemashal ve'ani gam ochel off. Beshabbat ani ochel off. Bli haor agav ki haor shel haof lo bari. Ani oseh et ze leman habriyut. כמובן שצריכים לאכול משהו, צריכים לאכול או עוף או דגים או משהו כדי לחזק את הגוף. אבל יש סוגי בשר שהם לא בריאים, וזה עלול לגרום להתקפי לב ולעוד מחלות חלילה לא עלינו שלא נדע. אז החלטתי שאני רוצה לשמור על הבריאות, אבל אני לא טבעוני. Okay, here's my answer to Ram 770. I told him, no, I am not a vegetarian because I eat chicken on Shabbat and without the skin, and I'll explain why I eat it without the skin in a moment, and because I eat fish. I eat fish frequently. And I love fish. I love salmon. I love salmon. I love tuna. I love fish. There are certain types of fish that are healthier than others, of course. But I like salmon and tuna, which are both very healthy, especially salmon. Salmon is very good for you. As far as chicken is concerned, why do I take the skin off of the chicken? Because the skin is loaded with cholesterol and saturated fat, and cholesterol and saturated fat can cause heart attacks and other illnesses, stroke, heart attack. It leads to clogging of the arteries. Chicken is actually healthy. It's actually good for you without the skin. And of course, if it isn't fried, fried is very bad. Anything fried is bad. And fish is certainly certain types of fish are very, very healthy. They're very good for you. So I just explained to Ram that I'm not a vegetarian because a vegetarian doesn't eat fish and doesn't eat chicken and completely avoids that. By the way, why do I have the diet I have? For health reasons. Strictly for health reasons, because I have a history in my family of health. You know, people had heart attacks and strokes and cancer in my family, and I'm 65 years old. I want to live as long as I can live. I mean, I don't know how much I have left, how much time I have left, but I want to live. I want to live so I can do things, Bezrat Hashem, God willing, for the Jewish people, for Israel. Okay, Ram, ani lo yachol lanot la she'ela ha'acharona shelcha, ki yesh lanu akshav migbala shel rak shtei she'elot lechol shoel. Az ani mitzta'er, aval... אני מודה לך על השאלות שלך. אני מודה לך. And I just told Ram that I can't answer his last question because there's a limit of 2 questions per person. But I thank Ram for his questions. And now we go to Chicago Jew, who certainly asks interesting questions and has interesting points to make. Chicago Jew says, I know we will agree on this. Please give your opinion on Illinois Governor J.P. Putzker, unquote. Okay. Yes, Chicago Jew. On this forum, you're not going to find any fans of the Illinois governor that you describe as J.P. Putzker. By the way, for those of you who want to know, his name is actually Pritzker, but Putzker is indeed a better name for him. I don't know if people know who he is who live outside of Illinois. He's an evil, self-hating Jewish billionaire. His family owns the Hyatt hotel chain, which should be boycotted. because, and the reason it should be boycotted is because when self-hating Jews own a company, or when anti-Semites and enemies of the Jewish people own a company, Jews and righteous Gentiles should boycott that company. And the Hyatt hotel chain is owned by the self-hating Jewish Pritzker family, an evil family that gives huge amounts of money to all the politicians who are enemies of the Jewish people, and gives huge amounts of money to other very anti-Semitic and evil causes. And we should boycott his hotel chain, and we should boycott him. We should do everything we can to defeat him, because he's a beast. Thank you very much, Chicago Jew. And now we go to the great Nachas. Nachas is really a great JTFer for a long time. I know Nachas for many, many years. Nachas writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, do you believe there is a logical correlation between the golden calf, modern-day materialism, superstition, and Avodah Zarah? Unquote. By the way, Avodah Zarah literally means foreign worship in Hebrew. But it's come to mean idolatry. And yes, I think there is a correlation. I think that all the things you're describing here, the golden calf, modern day materialism, superstition, Avodah Zarah, there's a Yetzer Hara and a Yetzer HaTov in everyone. A Yetzer Hara means the evil inclination, and the Yetzer HaTov is the good inclination. What is the Yetzer Hara? The Yetzer Hara is the desire to take for oneself. In other words, to take things for yourself, selfishly. And we all start out with that, because when a baby, what is a baby? A baby just takes, and it's appropriate that a baby should take. But the baby is born with the Yetzer Hara, only with the desire to take, to have milk and to be pampered and changed. And that's, so we start out getting used to that in life. Only later on, we eventually are supposed to develop a Yetzer HaTov. Yetzer Tov is the desire to give. In other words, the good inclination is to give and to help people and to care about other people and love other people. And the Yetzer Hara, the evil inclination, is to do things for selfish reasons, only for yourself. Because when you do good things, when you're kind and compassionate and merciful and truthful and honest and decent, you're emulating the Creator. You're going to be like the Creator, and that's the only way you can be close to God. That's the only way you can ever really have any relationship with God, is if you emulate His attributes, and kindness and compassion and mercy and truthfulness and honesty. Those are all the trademarks of the God who created the universe. When you do evil things, or selfish things, or people who only care about themselves, that creates a distance between yourself and God, because you're doing the opposite of what God is all about. Now, of course, there are certain things that we have to do in this world for ourselves. And if we don't do them, we can't survive. We have to breathe, which we do automatically, right? We have to eat and drink in order to survive. We have to have a roof over our heads and clothing and other things just to get by. So there are certain things we have to do that involve a certain level of selfishness and even Yetzer Hara. There has to be a certain level of that for us to survive. But we should try to keep that to a minimum as much as possible. And even that we should do for the purpose. We should take things in the world to survive and to prosper in order to be able to give. That should be our goal. In the next world, we're going to be taking things. We're going to be taking things from God. He's going to be giving us. But we're going to be taking in order that we can give, in order that we could be selfless and idealistic and self-sacrificing. That's what the next world is going to be all about. For eternity, good people are going to live forever, and they're going to be loving and compassionate and merciful and truthful and honest, and everyone will work together for the common good. And that truly will be paradise. Thank you, Nachas. And now we go to Am Raphael, who writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim, did you or Rav Kahana know that there were many Jews in the Confederacy? Unquote. I never discussed it with our beloved Rabbi Kahana, so I But he was so brilliant and so well educated and so worldly. He probably did know. And yes, of course, I do know, especially Judah Benjamin. Judah Benjamin was the Secretary of State of the Confederacy and was the Secretary of War and the Attorney General of the Confederacy. He held all those positions. Jefferson Davis, who was the President of the Confederacy, appointed him to all those positions. Yes, the Jews played a prominent role in the Confederacy. And now the second question, what are your thoughts about Russia and Ukraine as it relates to Israel? Russia and Ukraine are two nations that for centuries massacred Jews, hated Jews, filled with jealousy and hatred toward the Jewish people. Hundreds of thousands of Jews were massacred in Russia and in Ukraine. And I'm talking about before the Holocaust. And during the Holocaust, again, in Ukraine, it happened again. Babi Yar and the horrible massacres of Jews that took place at the hands of Ukrainian Nazis. The Ukrainian Nazis slaughtered hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian Jews during the Holocaust. Hashem Yikom Damam, may God avenge their blood. So these are nations that are enemies of the Jewish people. We will never forgive and never forget those who shed the blood of our innocent brothers and sisters. We will not forgive or forget. And Russia and Ukraine were enemies, and to this day, now Ukraine has a president who's Jewish, which doesn't impress me. Austria, Nazi Austria, elected a president who was supposedly Jewish, Kreisky, Bruno Kreisky, Mashmova Zichro. So that does not impress me. Anti-Semites will elect Jews if they think those Jews will work against the interests of their own people. So the Ukraine and Russia, their history is very clear, and Russia, especially to this day, remains a clear and present danger to the very survival of Israel and the Jewish people. A very serious danger. Russia, more than any other nation in the world, is working to help Iran develop nuclear bombs. Well, communist China and North Korea are also helping. The whole thing is a terrible situation because of the cowardly refusal of the leaders in the United States and in Israel to take out Iran's nuclear bomb-making program. But Russia plays a very prominent role in trying to help Iran develop nuclear bombs and in doing everything they can to undermine Israel and destroy Israel. That has always been their goal, and that remains their goal. Thank you, I'm Rafael, and now we go to the great Dr. Dan, another great JTFer who always asks also great questions. And Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, Shalom Chaim. 1. Michael Shabbat is considered karet, along with sex crimes and idol worshiping, among other things. Murder, on the other hand, doesn't get as harsh a punishment in the next world. Why do you think it is this way, or am I misunderstanding the big picture, unquote? Murder, actually, the penalty for murder. The only way we know about the next world, really, is what the penalties are in this world. That's how we usually discern what's going to happen in the next world, because obviously Hashem, God, is going to be the judge of what happens to people in the next world. And the penalty for murder is the same as the penalties for these other things that you're mentioning, Dr. Dan. Murder, there's no question that, and God over and over again makes very clear in the Bible and in the Torah how serious murder is, and how one of the major reasons why the first temple was destroyed, Beit HaMikdash HaRishon, was because of the shedding of blood, because of the murder that took place. So murder is not a lesser crime by any means in Judaism, not at all. It's as bad a thing as you can possibly do, is murder an innocent person. Now, you may be referring to there are different types of murder. Of course, there's murder there's murder bishkaga, which means unintentional. In other words, negligent homicide, like carelessly dropping something, like a worker carelessly dropping something on somebody walking down the street and the person gets killed, or someone carelessly killing somebody in an accident. That's called shkaga, which means it was unintentional. In that case, there are cities of refuge where people can go and are commanded to go under the Jewish religion. They have to go to a city of refuge in order to protect themselves from the relatives of the person who died accidentally, because otherwise the relatives of the person who died accidentally are liable to kill him in revenge, as an act of revenge. But murder that is intentional and premeditated, there's a death penalty for. The Sanhedrin, the court, is required to put to death someone who commits intentional murder against an innocent person. There's no question that it's absolutely the worst thing somebody can do. Now, you mentioned that Mechael Shabbat, violating the Sabbath, is considered karet. That's true. Karet means cut off, that somebody's cut off. That is true, but let's remember that that's somebody who defiantly does so, publicly and defiantly, and basically makes it an ideology and preaches it, and has been warned twice not to do it anymore. That there are witnesses, and he does it defiantly and publicly, and has been warned twice not to be going around carrying out this rebellion against God. This is basically, and I'm speaking about the death penalty, how somebody would get the death penalty for this. If someone defiantly and publicly says, I'm going to violate Shabbat, and does it in a generation where the rest of the Jewish people are keeping Shabbat, and where there's a Sanhedrin, where there's a rabbinic court at the Holy Temple, and even a generation like that decides, I'm going to defy and I'm going to continue and I know, and turns it into an ideology and is warned twice to stop. If the person takes the warning and doesn't do it anymore, nothing will happen to the person. But if they continue to try to get the Jewish people to commit a terrible sin, that's when you have that maximum penalty of murder in the case of someone violating Shabbat. So I hope that clarifies things to a certain degree. I hope so. But murder, someone who commits murder is intentional murder, is the death penalty. That's what Judaism commands. And now Dr. Dan writes, and I quote, "Two, what interactions, if any, did the JDL and the Guardian Angels have back in the day?" Unquote. None that I know of. I don't know of any interactions between the JDL and the Guardian Angels. The only interaction I had with Curtis Sliwa was that he invited me on his radio program 5 or 6 times. I've said that I thought that he did not treat me respectfully on the program, and kept saying that I'm guilty of dual loyalty, which is an anti-Semitic charge. Saying that, you know, Jews who are loyal to Israel are guilty of dual loyalty? What are you talking about? Every nation in the world, their survival is dependent on Israel. That's what it says in the Bible. Then the Bible is guilty of dual loyalty. Then God is guilty of dual loyalty, because God tells every nation, warns every nation in the world, I will bless them that bless thee and curse them that curse thee, that your blessings will come from loyalty to Israel and from supporting Israel and the Jews. So, but Curtis Sliwa, he didn't want to hear, he doesn't want to know about that. He kept saying, you know, he in effect wanted or demanded of me that I be willing to say that I'm loyal to the United States over loyalty to Israel, or something which I'm not going to say. I'm loyal to God and His commandments, and we must be loyal to Israel. And if anybody is loyal to the United States, then they're also going to be loyal to Israel, because the survival of every country depends upon Israel. Anyway, thank you so much, Dr. Dan, for the great questions again. Thank you. And now we go to Chabad Kahanist, who certainly comes up with very interesting topics on our forum all the time, and Chabad Kahanist was involved in JDL and in activities, Kahanist activities going back to the 1970s when I was involved, when both of us were very young. Chabad Kahanist writes, and I quote, "Chaim, do you remember Yossi Klein, Halevi, or Ron Kuby being in the JDL in the 70s as they claim? I think they're making it up, or else I would remember them being there," unquote. No, they certainly are lying, and you're right about that. Completely lying. Yossi Klein, Halevi. Ugh, what a disgusting creature. He pretends he was in the JDL, and he pretends this because he then can go around and sell himself as an author and a columnist who learned his lesson. He was with the far right, and he learned his lesson. And now he supports the two-state solution. He supports Israeli national suicide. He supports giving up all the land that Israel has. He's against the settlers. He doesn't like these settlers. He's a disgusting lowlife. And he's supposed to be a so-called religious Jew. This disgusting, evil, evil traitor. That's what he is. And he was not in JDL. And certainly, I don't know. I'm not going to say that he never went to any demonstration or never. There were people who, maybe went to a demonstration or a meeting here or there. Maybe went to one or two things, and then they say they were in JDL, in order to use that as a sledgehammer against righteous, loyal Jews. And Yossi Klein Halevi is that type of traitor. Ron Kuby was never in JDL in any way, shape, or form. Just made up the whole thing. Ron Kuby is the incarnation of evil. He is as evil as you can possibly get. Ron Kuby, an admitted communist, by the way, a militant atheist who wants Israel to be destroyed, admits that he doesn't want Israel to even exist, and supports all the Arab terrorists who want to commit genocide against the Jewish people. He voluntarily agreed to represent and pushed to represent. He wanted, he and William Kunstler, the other self-hating Judenrat capo, they wanted to represent the murderers of our beloved Rabbi Meir Kahana, Zecher Tzadik V'Kadosh Livracha Hashem Yikom Damo. The Arab terrorists from Al-Qaeda who murdered Rabbi Kahana and who committed the first bombing of the World Trade Center. Remember, in 1993, the World Trade Center was bombed the first time and 6 people were murdered. And then Rabbi Kahana was murdered. And Ron Kuby and William Kunstler represented those Arab terrorists from Al-Qaeda. Represented them he didn't want payment, he didn't want anything, he represented them. He was happy to represent them enthusiastically because he agrees with them. That's the type of subhuman scum that we're talking about when it comes to Ron Kuby. And by the way, Ron Kuby and Curtis Sliwa had a radio program for years and were buddies, and they said they disagreed and would joke with each other and they claimed to disagree. But it was a very disgusting arrangement there. It shows what a phony Curtis Sliwa is, that he would be willing to have a show with terrorists supporting scum, the lowest scum in the earth, in the world that you could possibly be. Ron Kuby? Have a radio show with him? Thank you, Chabad Kahanist. And now Kahana was right, BT, who, again, I know I say this, but this is just a perfect time for me. I'm having a great time because all the best JTFers, all the greatest JTFers and the greatest people on our forum are asking questions. So it's a real pleasure for me. And Kahana was right, BT is a very, very, not only a great forum member and someone who always has fantastic comments on the forum, but just is intelligent and talented and very knowledgeable. So it's great to have questions from Kahana was right. And he writes, and I quote, Chaim, have you ever heard about the claims that MI-16 purposely spread HIV/AIDS in Africa? What are your thoughts about that claim? Why would HIV/AIDS need help spreading in those jungles, unquote. Well, it's nonsense. I mean, you know, not that I'm a fan of MI-16. I'm not a fan of British intelligence, which works against Israel. And in general, the European countries are very anti-Israel and have always been, and the British notoriously anti-Israel. They did everything to enable the Holocaust and to try to destroy the Jewish people, literally try to destroy Israel, which they're still trying to do. The European Union is still trying to do that, and the British are not part of the European Union anymore after Brexit, but they do everything they can to undermine Israel's fight for survival, everything they can. And so I'm no fan of the MI-16, but they're not going to deliberately go around in the jungles of Africa and spread AIDS. The people who spread AIDS are blacks in Africa who ate monkey meat without cooking it. Who killed green monkeys? What's called the green monkey in Africa? They would cut off the green monkey's arms and organs and eat it raw. And, of course, the diseases that these animals have then were immediately spread to the black Africans. And then the black Africans had sex with Cuban soldiers who went to Africa under Fidel Castro in order to interfere in the crazy civil wars that you have in Africa. And then the Cuban soldiers came back and spread AIDS. They had AIDS. A lot of them got AIDS being in Africa, having sex with black Africans. And then the Cuban soldiers came back to the Western Hemisphere and spread it all over the Western Hemisphere. And it started, and then it was also spread in the Dominican Republic and in Haiti, and it just spread. Communist Cuban soldiers, I'm referring to, spread it. And some of them went later, you know, some of them left Cuba, and some of them traveled to Florida and Dominican Republic and Haiti and so on, and Jamaica. And so it spread throughout the Caribbean, which is where it started. But this was started by black Africans. Many diseases, like Ebola and AIDS, were spread by black Africans. That's a fact. Okay? And the Delta, the Delta virus is a new virus that comes from the third world. But a lot of these viruses, you know, the coronavirus, it's a new variant in the coronaviruses. But that also is a third world virus. And this is what happens when you have primitive countries and primitive people who have no sense of hygiene and no sense of decency. And if not for white scientists and Jewish scientists coming in and inventing things, inventing a cocktail of drugs to treat them and all other types of things to benefit them, if not for that, most of the black population in Africa would have been wiped out by AIDS by now. Because that was what was happening until the whites came in and tens of billions of dollars were poured into Africa to try to solve the problem and save them. And you couldn't have a people more ungrateful that bites the hand that feeds them than the black Africans. And Kahana was right, now asked too. In Rabbi Kahana's later speeches in the late 80s, he talked about the topic of transfer, about how the topic of transfer was put on the map by Kach, and everyone in the Knesset was talking about it, unlike when he first came to Israel and caused an uproar by even mentioning the idea of expelling the Arabs. He was telling audiences that Kach was winning because of this trend. It is astounding to hear these comments today. What happened since then, and what are the historical forces that erased all that progress and turned population exchange expulsion into a taboo subject again in Israeli politics as it is today? Great question, and the answer is very simple. Rabbi Kahana was murdered. When Rabbi Kahana was alive, that is true. It was becoming more and more of an accepted concept, and more people were thinking seriously about it, or at least compensating the Arabs and offering them money to leave. That was becoming a serious topic of conversation in Israeli politics because of Rabbi Kahana's influence. When Rabbi Kahana was murdered, everything went downhill because there was no one in Israeli politics who continued in his great legacy. And so everything went downhill as a result of his murder. And that's very tragic. Even his so-called successors who claim to be Kahanists, and now they say they disagree with him now, Baruch Marzel and Itamar Ben-Gavir and Michael Ben-Ari, Itamar Ben-Gavir was on Israeli television saying how he doesn't agree with any of the... They asked him question after question about things Rabbi Kahana proposed, and he said he doesn't agree with them anymore. He doesn't believe in that anymore. So, obviously, in a situation like that, when your own supposed followers, who are not really Kahanists, they're phonies, when your own supposed followers are rejecting your policies and are saying that you don't agree with it, what do you expect to happen? So, That's the tragic reality. Rabbi Kahana was murdered, and I would have continued preaching what Rabbi Kahana was preaching, but I'm banned from Israel, as we all know. So, unfortunately, that's where we stand right now, but let's hope and pray that the day will come when we will see, once again, a resurrection of these types of ideas coming into the central discussions of Israeli politics. Thank you very much. Kahana was right. And now we go to Kahana will always be right. who is new on our forum. Welcome to our forum. And he writes, and I quote, "Thoughts on Eric Zemmour," unquote. Okay, great question. Eric Zemmour is a Jew, a self-hating Jew, of Algerian background. In other words, an Algerian Jewish, Algerian Jew who lives in France. And he's the ultimate example of the assimilated self-hating Jew. He's a patriotic Frenchman. And his self-hating positions are so evil and so horrible. This is a so-called Jew who defended the Vichy French, who defended the Vichy Republic. The Vichy French were the French who worked with Hitler and the Nazis during the Holocaust, who supported Hitler and the Nazis during the Holocaust when Hitler and the Nazis came in and invaded France. And Eric Zemmour claims that the Vichy French and the Vichy French regime, which was directly responsible for transferring 75,000 Jewish men, women, and children to the Nazi death camps, and those Jews were murdered. 75,000 Jews were murdered by the Vichy French directly because they were sent to the death camps not by the German Nazis. The French police and the Vichy French rounded up those 75,000 Jewish men, women, and children. And if France had not been liberated by the Allies, many more French Jews would have died. It's because France eventually was liberated by the Allies because of the Allied invasion of Europe, and the Germans were thrown out of France. But if not for that happening, when it happened, many more than 75,000 French Jews would have been murdered. And Eric Zemmour, this Holocaust revisionist, this lying, cheating, lowlife, cowardly, Judenrat, capo, piece of subhuman filth, has the nerve to try to justify and whitewash the crimes of French Nazis who openly said they were Nazis and openly defended Hitler and the German Nazis and worked with Hitler and the German Nazis and wanted Hitler and the German Nazis to win the war. And he defends these people and says they tried to save Jews, that they actually saved Jews, when they're the ones who voluntarily went out and rounded the Jews up and put them on trains and had a... and passed legislation, the same anti-Jewish legislation that was passed in the Nuremberg laws that were passed in Germany against the Jews. That same legislation, almost identical legislation, almost word for word, was passed in France during the Vichy regime. And Eric Zemmour defends the Vichy French because he feels, well, they were right-wing Frenchmen. He feels. First of all, Nazis are not right wing. Okay, Nazis is National Socialism, they're leftists. But that's besides the point. For someone from a Jewish background to defend that is the lowest thing you can't get lower than that. This is worse than the German or French Nazis or Gentile Nazis. Gentile Nazis, okay, they come from a different people and they hate the Jewish people. I understand that sometimes people who come from a different nation hate people from other nations. It's wrong. Anyone who's a Nazi is evil and wrong and terrible. But for a Jew to back this, a Jew after what they did to the Jewish people and what they want to do to every last Jew, they would have killed Eric Zemmour as well. But that doesn't matter to these self-hating Jews. They're so sick and so evil and so depraved that they'll defend people who carried out the Holocaust. And he now is a serious potential contender for the presidency of France. He may become the next president of France. It's possible, God forbid. But he's considered to be a serious potential candidate for the presidency of France. So that's a real threat to the Jewish people. Thank you, Kahana will always be right. And now we go to Michael R., also a new JTFer, who writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. You briefly mentioned Rudolf Kastner on one of your programs. Can you go into a little more detail about him and or other well-known Judenrat capos during the Holocaust? Do people have an idea surrounding how many of these traitors there were? Thank you," unquote. Well, there were many of them. There were many Jewish traitors among the Jewish leadership in Europe, unfortunately. Just like the Jewish leaders today are Judenrat capos. These are people who work with all those who are trying to destroy Israel and trying to destroy the Jewish people, and work with them for their own profit, for their own benefit, for their own crazy reasons. So unfortunately, it's something that never, it was never solved, because the Jewish people allow their traitors to live. Normal people execute traitors, but these people allow their traitors to live. I'll give you an example. Rudolf Kastner, you ask about Rudolf Kastner. He was the head of the Judenrat in Hungary. And because of him, hundreds of thousands of Jews were sent to the death camps. Hundreds of thousands of Hungarian Jews. And he worked and collaborated directly with the German SS to facilitate that process in order to save his own neck and to save the necks of, I don't remember exactly how many, maybe 1,500 Jews that from the elite that he saved, including the Satmar Rebbe, by the way. He saved a certain number of Jews, and the rest of the Jews in Hungary were betrayed. And he lied to the Jews in Hungary and persuaded them to get on the cattle cars going to Auschwitz and going to the death camps. He was responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Jews. And this monster then is allowed to make Aliyah and go to Israel and is defended by David Ben-Gurion, the first prime minister of Israel, and the whole Israeli leadership. They're defending him. They defended him. Someone who did this. It's unbelievable. There was a trial against him. I mean, there was a trial where he sued somebody and the judge ruled against him. And the judge said that he made a pact, that he, Rudolf Kastner, made a pact with the devil. But of course, it was overturned then by the Israeli Supreme Court, which is run by Judenrat capos also. I mean, horrible. You have to read the book if you want to know if you want to see the documentation for everything I'm saying. All of it is documented. Read the book Perfidy by Ben Hecht. People should get the book Perfidy by Ben Hecht. I don't know where you go. I don't know if you go to Amazon. I don't know who you go to now to get it. But Perfidy by Ben Hecht, an essential book. There's another book Ben Hecht wrote, Child of a Century. That's a little bit harder to get, but if you can get it in the library or get it wherever you get it, another book, there's one chapter in there. The rest, most of the book is about Hollywood, because Ben Hecht was a Hollywood producer, but he did write one chapter about his activities to try to save Jews during the Holocaust, and he did save Jews during the Holocaust. He and the Jabotinsky Jews saved Jews during the Holocaust while American Jewish leaders were stabbing the Jews in Europe in the back. But anyway, you got to read that book, Perfidy by Ben Hecht, or Child of a Century by Ben Hecht, and you see it's clearly documented, the betrayals that took place. Now, what's unbelievable about this story, not only was Kastner defended by the Prime Minister and by all the leadership in Israel after what he did, to this day you have the same situation. His granddaughter, Merav Michaeli, Yimach Shma v'Zichra Shem Reshayim Yirakav, may the name of the wicked, may her name be, may her name be eliminated, and may the wicked rot. Merav Michaeli, his granddaughter, is now in the Israeli Knesset, in the Israeli Parliament, and she's the head, the leader of the Labor Party, which is the party that was the leading party in Israel during most of Israel's history. The head of the Labor Party is the granddaughter of this Nazi war criminal, Rudolf Kastner. Can you believe this? And she's also in the cabinet of the new government. She's the Secretary of Transportation in the new government. And of course, she supports the Arabs and supports the illegal aliens and supports everything evil and terrible and destructive in Israel. In other words, she doesn't fall far from the rotten poison tree. You know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. She's just like her evil Nazi grandfather. And this beast, she's allowed to be in the Israeli cabinet, member of the Knesset, head of the Labor Party, major party in Israel. I'm not even allowed to set foot in Israel. I fought all my life and sacrificed all my life to save Jewish lives. Her and her family are responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Jews. Her grandfather is responsible for the murder of hundreds of thousands of Jews, and she justifies it and backs him. That's what we have today. That's what we have. That's the leadership we have today. It's a story that is so tragic and so horrifying and filled with such evil that it's people have a hard time believing that it's true. But they have to read and they have to study and see the documentation in order to know that every word that we're saying here is true. Thank you, Michael R., and I want to thank everybody for another program of Ask JTF. By the way, those of you who want to ask questions on the program, all you have to do is register on our forum, which is jtf.org/F, the JTF forum. Or you could look up, you could even Google it, or go to one of the, you know, go to one of the search engines and put in Jewish Task Force, but go to our forum. Go to the forum, or you can go to our main page and click on forum on top. You go to the forum, register on the forum. It only takes a few minutes, very easy, simple registration. And then, once you're registered on the forum, you can ask questions as well. You can join us and ask questions as well every week. We're working to make a difference in Judea and Samaria by helping the Hilltop Youth, who are the Maccabees of our generation. Unfortunately, tragically, we're the only organization financially supporting them. I hope that changes. But right now we are, and we're very proud of what we're doing, and it is making a big difference. If you want to be part of making that difference, of changing history to help the Jewish people and to help Israel at a critical time, you can join with us, help us. Let's work together. If we work together as a team, we can change Jewish history. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach.